Hi, Anton Savage here from News Talk. Now, if you're a parent, you'll know the school question comes up again and again. Where's the right fit? Somewhere that's not just about grades, but where your kids actually enjoy learning and feel part of something. Nord Anglia International School, Dublin. It's actually Ireland's only IB continuum school, so kids can start there at 3 years of age and stay right through to 18 following the International Baccalaureate, which is recognised worldwide. The school is known as a warm, inclusive international community. Kids are encouraged to be curious, to try new things, and to build the confidence that'll carry them through life. So if you're curious, have a look yourself. Head to naisdublin.com. That's naisdublin.com. Now, I hope you enjoy your podcast.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
As Australia continues to mourn the loss of victims shot at Bondi Beach in the terror attack, focus is now shifting to strengthening Australia's gun laws. But already Australia has one of the strictest gun laws in the world following a mass shooting in Tasmania in the 1990s. Prime Minister Albanese met with the state and territory leaders to discuss the introduction of tighter gun laws across the country.
And this afternoon at 4 o'clock, we'll put on the agenda of the National Cabinet tougher gun laws, including limits on the number of guns that can be used or licensed by individuals. A review of licenses over a period of time. People's circumstances change. People can be radicalised over a period of time. Licenses should not be in perpetuity. And checks, of course, making sure that those checks and balances are in place as well.
However, in New South Wales, Premier Chris Minns has already confirmed his intention to introduce new legislation to the state parliament.
They need to change and they can change. It does require legislation, and it means introducing a bill to parliament to be really blunt, make it more difficult to get these horrifying weapons that have no practical use in our community. If you're not a farmer, if you're not involved in agriculture, why do you need these massive weapons that put the public in danger and make life dangerous and difficult for New South Wales police?
Meanwhile, leaders around the world expressed their horror at Sunday's terrorist attack on Bondi Beach. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu admonished the Albanese government for not doing enough to stamp out anti-Semitism.
On August 17th, about 4 months ago, I sent Prime Minister Albanese of Australia a letter in which I gave him warning that the Australian government's policy was promoting and encouraging anti-Semitism in Australia. I wrote, "Your call for a Palestinian state pours fuel on the anti-Semitic fire. It rewards Hamas terrorism. It emboldens those who menace Australian Jews and encourages the Jew hatred now stalking your streets. Anti-Semitism is a cancer. It spreads when leaders stay silent. It retreats when leaders act. I call upon you to replace weakness with action, appeasement with resolve. Instead, Prime Minister, you replaced weakness with weakness and appeasement with more appeasement. Your government did nothing to stop the spread of anti-Semitism in Australia."
And that was the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. For more on all of this, I'm joined by Hamish McDonald, presenter of Mornings on ABC Radio Sydney. Hamish, good morning, or good evening to you.
Good morning to you.
Now, let's talk about reaction to this admonishment by Benjamin Netanyahu, criticising Australia for its recognition of a Palestinian state. What do Australians make of that kind of public criticism?
Well, the Prime Minister was asked about that criticism within the last hour, and he said his job in this moment is to unite Australia, not to find reasons to be divided. Certainly there will be some shared views in the Australian community. The Jewish community, particularly here in Sydney, is quite angry. Not all of them, it must be said, but a significant proportion nonetheless, quite angry with the Albanese government, not just in relation to the recognition of a Palestinian state, but also because of its perceived lack of or its perceived inaction in tackling anti-Semitism. The government's own anti-Semitism envoy handed down a report back in July with a raft of specific recommendations for tackling anti-Semitism in Australia, and the government, the federal government, is yet to formally respond to that report as a whole, although the government has today been defending its position, saying that it has already begun to implement some of the measures recommended in that review.
Now, he was accused by Netanyahu of promoting anti-Semitism, which is even stronger than simply ignoring the recommendations of a committee. So that idea that the Albanese government would actually be promoting anti-Semitism by simply the recognition of a Palestinian state, is that a bridge too far, that kind of accusation?
Look, I mean, I have to observe, I mean, I did hear some people in Bondi, as I was reporting from there today, discussing what Netanyahu had said, but certainly in this moment, it's not really where the focus or the attention has been in Australia. There's deep shock in the community. There are people still waiting to hear for news of loved ones. There are immediate and ongoing police investigations. Tonight, you know, details starting to emerge about alleged links with ISIS between the younger of the two gunmen and others that were arrested and investigated by the intelligence agencies in recent years. It may be that the commentary of Benjamin Netanyahu does start to shape the conversation in the days and weeks ahead. And it did make the news here tonight, but I don't think it's been where the focus is today. Yeah. It's worth remembering, you know, Bondi is a location that speaks very closely to the Australian identity. So although this was an attack on the Jewish community specifically, I think all Australians have felt it in a particularly acute way because, in a way, this is our city's backyard, this is our nation's backyard.
The recriminations no doubt will start, and the question of whether or not there was an intelligence failure, and we'll talk in a moment about the gun laws, whether they were allowed to kind of relax a little bit. But first of all, that intelligence failure, because we were learning earlier on the program that both father and son were Australian citizens.
The son was Australian born. The father had immigrated initially on an education visa and then had stayed and built a life here. They lived in southwestern Sydney, so quite a distance from Bondi Beach. There will be questions about the levels of intelligence. I don't think anyone so far has alleged a significant failure because the son was interviewed, the family was interviewed some years ago in connection with supporters of ISIS. But at the time, and the Prime Minister was saying this tonight on live television about an hour ago, that there was nothing at that time that indicated that there was an intention to act or that they were involved themselves. It was simply that they had connections with people that possessed those sympathies. I think also some of the intelligence analysis that's been presented today has referred to what our intelligence agencies have mentioned only months ago, that radicalization in these times can occur very quickly, in part because of overseas conflicts, but also because of digital output content that's available. The radicalization can happen in a period of days and weeks rather than a period of years. So certainly there'll be questions, but at the moment, I don't think any of even the harshest critics of the government have pointed to any obvious failures of intelligence.
Now, it goes back almost 30 years to that shooting at Port Arthur in Tasmania, which killed 35 people, that the government at that time radically tightened up the gun ownership laws. And that has had a very good effect. I was reading that between July 2023 and June of 2024, Australia saw only 31 gun-related murders, which is a homicide rate of 0.09 per 100,000 people, which is very, very small. So Clearly, the gun laws were working, but there must be loopholes to allow individuals such as the father and son to have access to weaponry that allowed them to do what they did.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's worth saying for your listeners, although we do have restrictive gun laws in Australia, it doesn't mean that you can't own a gun. There are licensed firearms, and the father, the older of the two gunmen, was a licensed firearm owner. He had, in fact, had a license for over a decade, and there had been no previous incidents. It allowed him to possess multiple weapons. He had six that the police were aware of, at least publicly anyway. And so this was all entirely within the law. But the National Cabinet met today, so that involves the federal and the state and territory governments. The leaders of all of those governments met, and they agreed to work towards further restrictions. For example, after Port Arthur, one of the recommendations was a national firearms register, and that's never been fully implemented. So they are planning to work towards that. Also, limit the number of weapons people can have. They would also perhaps move to make sure that only Australian citizens can possess a weapon. I know you were saying, talking about the nationality of these two individuals, but I believe the father may not actually have been a citizen. So that may have impacted his capacity to own these weapons, but also the licensing would not be in perpetuity. So you can't get a license for a weapon and then hold it forever, that you'd have to continue to be reviewed. And that obviously would make sense. Australians tend to be very proud of our gun laws. Mm.
Now, just going back to that whole charge by Netanyahu of anti-Semitism in Australia. Now, there's anti-Semitism probably everywhere, but do Australians generally, not conflate what's happening in Gaza, for example, with ordinary Jewish people, many of whom have been very articulate in condemning what the Israeli government has done in Gaza, and yet they remain, you know, Jewish to their core. So do Australians distinguish readily the difference between what the Israeli government does and what Jewish people stand for?
Look, I think as would probably be the case where you are, the answer to that question would depend on your individual perspective and perhaps even your own religious grouping. There are certainly Jews I've spoken to that feel that they have, as individuals, been conflated with the positions, the approaches taken by the Israeli government, particularly over the past two or so years. The Australian government has repeatedly said that Australians should never mix those two things up, but clearly some people do. I've overheard some older, very well-intentioned women today down at the vigil locations asking why the Israeli flag was being displayed. They felt it was more appropriate that the Australian flag be displayed. There are certainly mixed feelings, obviously a great deal of opposition in Australia to what Israel has done in Gaza over the past 2.5 years. But equally, you know, I heard from a lot of Jewish Australians today that feel that they have been left alone. One Jewish Australian texted me in the hours after the attack saying, look, we weren't exaggerating when we told you that this sort of thing was possible. All of these small steps along the way, the daubing of paint outside of a preschool or the firebombing of a bakery, these are all steps along the way to something worse. And we had warned that something like this might be possible, and now it's happened. It's our worst fears realised.
Hamish McDonald, presenter of Mornings on ABC Radio Sydney and the Global Roaming podcast. Hamish, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Hi, Anton Savage here from News Talk. Now, if you're a parent, you'll know the school question comes up again and again. Where's the right fit? Somewhere that's not just about grades, but where your kids actually enjoy learning and feel part of something. Nord Anglia International School, Dublin. It's actually Ireland's only IB continuum school, so kids can start there at 3 years of age and stay right through to 18 following the International Baccalaureate, which is recognised worldwide. The school is known as a warm, inclusive international community, Kids are encouraged to be curious, to try new things, and to build the confidence that'll carry them through life. So if you're curious, have a look yourself. Head to naisdublin.com. That's naisdublin.com. Now, I hope you enjoy your podcast.